Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, tennis fans from around the globe. The following program is a presentation of the Yellow Ball Network.
Are we on?
Yep, we're on.
All right, let's go.
Broadcasting live from the Tennis Dynamics Studio in downtown Marietta, Georgia, this is the We Coach Tennis Radio Show on the Yellow Ball Network. Your host for the show this week is J.P. Weber.
Okay, everybody, welcome back to the We Coach Tennis Radio Show. We'd love to hear from you on the Yellow Ball Hotline. The number is 646-652-4856. We're on normally every Tuesday at noon, but over the winter months here, I've been trying to adjust crazy schedules for people. So I've been trying to include things where we can get a variety of guests on to visit with us. I'm going to jump right into my 78-foot soapbox. Over the past week, we've seen some changes and some stuff going on in collegiate tennis. All of this goes back to the idea that tennis needs to adjust and change in certain ways to create or to connect with a larger audience. But what's happened is, and what the end result of a lot of this is that, people are looking at college tennis or they're looking at any tennis match that's played as an inconvenience. The inconvenient tennis match, the inconvenient collegiate tennis match and things of that nature. This weekend, Lisa Stone wrote on her blog about the comparison between ESPN at their inception and trying to get basketball more visible on television and that, and tried to make a similar comparison. And I wanted, I enjoyed the article. I think she does a great job and she should keep doing it. She is right on target with a lot of stuff that she does. On this one, I wanted to take issue with that. Look, since 1989, I've been, this is 89, 90, somewhere right in there. I was coaching at Clemson, then studying at Clemson, then coaching at Furman with the great Paul Scarpa, the guy who came up with. Now, after a lot of experimentation, he came up with a format. I call it the Scarpa format, the doubles first, singles second. There was a lot of debate over it. At that time, they needed to shorten the format and things of that nature. So they got it down to a format that would work. And I ended up writing a master's thesis on this at Clemson on spectatorship. But I visited all the programs across the country and the coaches that mattered. Look, I visited Dan McGill. I visited Dick Gould. I visited Mike DePalmer, Coach Bayless, and many others. These guys took an interest in garnering spectators, garnering fans, putting them in the seats, getting them to the matches at that time. And I think that's the key right there. I think that there are so many things that can be done beyond changing the scoring system to get this done. I personally believe that it's overblown. But she goes on in the blog to compare ESPN basketball, where they were at the inception trying to get these fans. At the time, I think they were hungry for that program, and I think that programming was very important. So, you could also note that in the early 1980s, there was a show. There was, I think it was early, maybe late 70s, early 80s, there was a one-hour synopsis show on ESPN for collegiate tennis. And I would think that if you wanted to do something, my take on this at this point is I love Dick Gould's idea about pointing things more toward the streaming, and I would like a synopsis show every week of different programs and things of that nature, and build up an interest. I think in her comparison with college basketball, there was a demand for it at that time. So, you know, the problem that you have with basketball and with tennis is you've got six courts with tennis. It's very, very difficult to show everything in one on. You know, in basketball you've got one court and you've got a clock. What changed in basketball was not necessarily the amount of play or the time of play. They didn't shorten the game in that sense. They did shorten the passes back and forth. In other words, they got away from the four corners and they got away from this and that. But they kept the clock was the same. But they did get where they got away. You know, they added a different clock to it in terms of possession and things of that nature. So now, when they first started talking about this, it was about television. It was about this. Then it changed, and it was a 3-hour thing. Now they're going back to a 3.5-hour thing. If it's 3.5 hours, it's my belief that if you limit the warm-up or you limit the time in between the matches and the officials are on target with the time in between games and the time in between points and things of that nature, the Scarpa format is the best format that is a great compromise. It showcases doubles to begin with and then adds, you know, the singles in between. If you're going to make it – any more cuts, any more toward the no ad side of this, I think it's going to create a much more, it's going to create a product that's less, it's going to less attractive to the fans. Now, additionally, now look, here's another place where I took issue with her blog. If you frame the argument that if you are against no ad scoring, then you're not able to think forward, I think that's wrong. I think many of the guys who do the best in terms of garnering fans are the most innovative people. If there was anybody more innovative than Paul Scarpa, I don't know who it was. He would go out, he would try things, he would do things, he would switch things around. But he was willing to experiment. And I doubt he'd be for, you know, going for this no ad thing. There are 100 other things. There are at least 100 other things that coaches could do to get fans in the stands and solve this idea that somehow college tennis has to become more relevant. You know, and I'm going to finish this up here. One example that I have was the last match that I just went to down at Georgia Tech was scheduled at 5 o'clock in the afternoon on a Friday in Atlanta. And I can't understand, if they're all about garnering fans, there's no way people are going to travel through that traffic to go to a match. So, you know, I don't think that's the case. One other thing, the environment that existed before is when she compares what was going on with ESPN and whatnot, is very different. One of the biggest differences, one of the other big differences in collegiate sports is the enforcement of Title IX and the way that money is spent. No matter what we do in terms of putting tennis, men's tennis or women's tennis on television, Title IX changed a lot of things in terms of where money can and can't be spent. They spent a lot of money on women's volleyball and basketball, and it's an effort to create demand where perhaps demand is not there. That same infrastructure, that same money that's going to be spent, isn't going to be there. So, in conclusion, if a school's garnering fans, look, you can bet that it's because of the coach that's at the school doing the work that they're doing. It's because of that coach. That's why they have fans. And, you know, they're doing, those coaches are in the background doing much more than meets the eye. They're doing a whole lot of stuff to market their team and stuff. So that's my 78-foot soapbox for this week. I'm going to hopefully we've had it's bounced. People probably gotten tired of listening to my 78-foot soapbox this week. So they've gone on and off. I've got several callers here. I want to take a quick commercial break. I'll come back. You know, some are saying we are headed towards civil war here with some of the stuff that's going on. So let me take a quick commercial break, come back, and we'll get on to the discussion today. Coaches and players, if you play on a tennis court in the Southeast, you've probably played on a tennis court designed, constructed, lighted, or resurfaced by courtmakers.com. Marshall Dye and the guys at Courtmakers will work on any type of court. From my experience with them, they work in a professional manner, they show up on time like they say they will, and they never leave a mess. Courtmakers can provide for all equipment needs. Call them at 770-795-8400. 770-795-8400. That's courtmakers.com.
Hey, come play the Marietta Grand Prix. It's a lot of fun. You get to play a lot of tennis, and we have Chick-fil-A sandwiches from Chick-fil-A. And you get to eat a lot. And if you can, you can play doubles with your friends or with your dad or your mom.
Hey folks, this is J.P. Weber, Take It From the Kid. The 2015 Handmade Charlotte Marietta Grand Prix Series of Tournaments is a great way to spend the day with the family playing tennis. To find out more, go to www.tennisdynamics.net. That's tennisdynamics.net, where you can call us at the Laurel Park Tennis Center at 770-919-8602.
Hi, this is Coach Chuck Creasy. I take great pride in calling it the way it is. It's a meat and potato principle of coaching that no one really cares what you know unless they know that you care. As a parent also, I want this and very skilled hands working with my youngster. Coach J.P. Weber's 30 years of experience speaks for itself. Go see him at Laurel Park in Marietta, Georgia. His website is TennisDynamics.net. TennisDynamics.net.
All right, some have said that we are heading toward a battleground here. I'm going to take my it looks like my first caller here. I'm guessing this is, I should recognize the number by now. This is Coach Creasy, correct?
Hey, JP, how are you today?
Hey, listen, let me play, actually, before I get you, I want to play one thing for you real quick. I've got a clip here from Kobe Bryant. Let me play this for you. Kobe is answering the question why he likes basketball so much. I want you to hear this because I want to – it's going to go off topic. Since I got you, I figured I want to play this. Let you listen to this. Here we go.
The best part of basketball, so many things. I can give you an example of the game of basketball that I absolutely love, which kind of shows how maniacal I was about it. Back in the 80s, when the game used to be played, I watched the Lakers play, and the nets that were used are different than they are now. I don't know why. They were longer, and they were tighter. It was like they were more crisp. So when a player was shooting, you know, for example, if the ball would hit the back of the rim,
mm-hmm.
pop, pop, and fall in this way,
go right.
Pop, pop, the net would take shape of the ball.
Going in and out.
So the net would stay that way.
Right.
Right. And so you get, and the ball would go straight to the net. You could hear the. So, answer your question, because those kind of details are what drive me crazy every day. When I love it, like those little things.
Coach, Coach, I don't know if you can understand what he was saying. Kobe was asked by a guy.
I know the commercial. I know that what you're referring to, it did not come through very well over the radio, but I know exactly. That's when he was talking about nuances. He liked the way the net used to hold the ball when he would shoot, and it would he doesn't like the new nets. Is that what you're talking about?
Talking about that, but I had on this show numerous times, I had Bill Wright, another coach named Gary Engelbrecht. I've had numerous coaches on there talk about that is the feedback that the players get from shooting from a young age. It was almost addictive. And while I am a proponent of using anything out there that you can, that's one of the things in the winter months here. We struggle so much with the green dot ball and some of the kids. I'm out watching this past weekend. We had some USTA matches. By the way, they're doing better here. We've got some 12-and-unders. We got some 12-and-unders in South Carolina that are allowing some yellow ball competition, things of that nature. But I think that's what's missing in some of this, that feedback that you used to get. You know, the backboard, numerous people talk to me about that. You can't use the backboard the same way with that orange ball. It's not the same feel on the racket that's addictive. Can you speak to that just for a second before we get into this
conversation? Yeah, you know, I've been often asked this question, but I tell people I played tennis as a child to get three drugs, dopamine, adrenaline, and endorphins. And the dopamine rush is what he's talking about. You get a dopamine rush from beautiful music, you get it from cracking a bat perfectly against a baseball. You get it from hitting a golf ball perfectly with an old wood club. You see, technology's has hurt the game in a lot of ways, and we used to get a dopamine rush as kids from hitting the ball perfectly. It was addictive. It would keep you on the backboard for hours trying to find a sweet spot. And I saw immediately what happened when they start going high-tech with all the rackets. There should have been something done at that point to keep kids on small rackets so that they would fall in love with it, and then to also maybe the pros stay with the standard rackets so that there was a skill set. Well, they've actually evolved. They use smaller rackets and rackets where they feel the ball just because they want that feel, just like golfers do. But the long and the short of it, the technology screwed the game up pretty bad because you don't get the same dopamine rush that you used to as a child playing the game. And it's so easy to pick up, easy to put down, hard to pick up, hard to put down.
I've had so many people on this show, you know, different coaches from different areas bring that up now that I don't think that it's a myth. I do think there is something to it.
Yep, sure is. And our game is chess. It's chess. It should never be turned into checkers.
Were you able to get and, you know, this dovetails into in the sense that if you're against, you know, everything about the tenant and the mandate, perhaps you're not forward-thinking enough. And if you're scoring, if you're against this type of stuff, you're not forward-thinking enough.
They're
more forward-thinking than Paul Scarpa or yourself. And you guys, I mean, there's something, too, though, that needs to, I don't know what I'm missing. What am I missing in this whole thing?
Well, basically have promoted a ruse. You know what a ruse is, don't you? I mean, basically something, they promote something that's not true. It's a sleight of hand that they do. And for them to try to demonize people that are trying to honor the traditions of our game is a very, very wrong thing to do. I'll leave it at that as far as name calling. It's just a wrong thing to do for these guys. And the point being is that our game should be honored, and the tradition should be honored. The depth of the game should be honored. We have the most beautiful game in the world. And listen, this is not about a time-shortening format. It is not about, hey, let's breed more excitement. Let's get it on TV. It's never been about that. It's always been about promoting an agenda that we all would like to have put out there very clearly and well-defined, And we all believe it's been to promote a shortened agenda that in the end will bastardize tennis into something that we don't recognize. We'll turn football into arena football. We're going to turn chess into checkers. It's to say that we're not for progress.
But there's a basic, when you go into Costco or Sam's, they've got guys out there selling samples. There's a basic marketing idea that you give somebody a sample of something. I suppose on a basic level, you know, at a real low level with tennis, introducing kids and introducing people to tennis, I don't begrudge a shortened format. I don't begrudge that on that level at all. Do you find that objectionable to you?
No, I agree. I talked to a USTA guy week ago, and they said, are you opposed to short formats for entry levels? None of us are. None of us are that. We're against the bastardization of the most beautiful, wonderful game in the world. And nobody wants something that is a sort of game or something that is, the rackets, somebody said yesterday, it's like putting those things up on bowling lanes where the kids, the ball never goes into the alley. You know, it's like making a big pizza pie hole for golf. Thinking the kids are going to like it more because they can be successful. No, they don't like it more. They think about why they play video games for hours, because they almost get it and then they're denied. They almost get it and then they're denied. They almost get it and then they're denied. Tennis had that type of an addictive flavor to it growing up for all of us. We played it because it was hard to do, not because it was easy to do.
Well, I tell you what, I'm going to grab another. I got so many people on the line here. There's a number here, 864-525. Are you there, caller?
Paul Scarpa.
Coach Scarpa, how you doing, Coach?
Good. I got your email.
Hey, listen, Coach, I mentioned you. I don't know if you listened. I was with you in the early 90s when you came up with the point system, and I think it got it around. I mentioned you quite a bit in the 78-foot soapbox earlier. I don't know if you heard it, but you experimented quite a bit. You went through this stuff. Have you kept up with what they're doing these days?
I have kept up, but I don't think anybody really appreciates my opinions on it, and so I haven't been anything except a couple of coaches did call me and ask me to get involved, and basically I talked to one and the conversation ended there. But basically they wanted to shorten the format more, which I've never been. Really the shortened format was to create more energy and enthusiasm for doubles, and it proved to be that, because what happened is if you were to sit out one of your better players and doubles, they didn't want to sit out. They wanted to play because it was a chance for them to get a good warm-up. The other side of that is, you'd go play a match, and with one team won, doubles, guys say, we going to play doubles? God, it's already 5:30. We going to have to play? Why don't we just default doubles? And that's what everybody did. And of course, they want to protect themselves by saying, once the match is won, therefore you don't even have to play doubles. So it's a choice, But consequently, all that sort of got everybody tried to jump in and throw in something when something was working good, well. And I don't say it because I thought it up. I just felt like we had to do something or we wouldn't be playing doubles, And the biggest argument coming towards me was, why did you de-emphasize doubles? Well, I think everybody who actually coached and experienced doubles really rose to another level, simply because the kids all wanted to play, and they warmed up knowing that they were going to play doubles, and they were excited about it. And everybody practiced doubles a lot more because of the 1 point rather than giving them 3 points, which everybody wanted. And so that really, got doubles going, in my opinion. Now, right, so everybody said, well, we got, I know there's a group that's trying to put it on television, this, that, and the other. But the facts are, all they had to do, how many baseball teams take and put a tough player out there to warm up the opposing team and start giving them batting practice. Well, why do you warm up with each other? Why do you play doubles and you hit all cross court, 90% of the shots are cross court, but then when you play, you hit up, but you warm up down the line. I mean, so you almost ought to be a warming up with your teammate across court and the other teammates. But to be honest, eliminating the warm up is huge. And I think people come out and prepare and practice, and a coach can, work them in areas that that he knows they're going to encounter rather than just going out and hitting balls. And then going back to the whole scoring part, I mean, all you got to do is just, like the most exciting thing about maybe swimming or track is running against the time, a foul shot. I mean, an overtime period in basketball. I mean, how exciting is that? Well, tennis needs maybe shortening the system by, an overtime period is simply once you get, you play a set, play it ever how you want to do it, but once it gets to be six all, you don't drag somebody off the court. I mean, good heavens. You give them a chance to play and finish the match. And my theory is that you could play, go ahead and play Noad at that point or something. But usually when you start out a match, the way I would do it is I'd play the match
as regular,
just like we do
coach,
scoring.
Hold on, Coach Creasy, do you hear that? Now, first of all, I feel like I got the two most – I work for a lot of guys throughout all over the country, and I think I have probably the two most innovative minds. But that right there alone, did you hear that, Coach Creasy?
Did you hear what he said
where it was clinched? Instead of dragging him off the court, switch to Noad then.
Yeah, exactly.
That's a better thing than just pulling people off the court.
All right. Yeah, the pulling the people off the court is terrible. But let me say this, make this point. Paul, I think, will agree, is that format for the match is quite different than our sacred scoring system. And I call it sacred because that's what it is. If we do away with this beautiful scoring system we have, we take the depth out of our game. And please understand what I'm saying. Nobody, including myself, cares in the end about the team format all that much. We can do whatever we want to that with it. I've got my heels stuck in for the rest of my life for not going to this NOAD scoring because we see how it destroys the players and their ability to concentrate for long periods of time, their ability to where fitness matters, their ability to learn about war zones. The long games are what breaks the player down or makes a match. You're not a player until you can win those lose a long war zone and then survive it and come back, or until you win a long war zone and gain the momentum. It's the drama of the intrigue. Look, excitement dwindles with each occurrence. Drama intensifies with each denial. We have an Alfred Hitchcock movie right now with regular scoring. NOAD scoring's like a slasher movie that is scary the first time, and then it's laughable, about the fourth or fifth time. So I wanted to make that point that it's not about format. The battle is about preserving regular scoring, and what he says is almost always brilliant. You know that. I mean, he was the one that saved what we were doing before. He got up in 1991 or whatever it was, and when he spoke, the whole room went quiet like E.F. Hutton, and everybody applauded him. I've never seen that happen. It's always been called the Scarpest scoring system, and then the daggone guys would not call it that because they tried to act like it was theirs. They even stole the name of that, so... Anyhow, yeah, I'm emotional about this, but it's about the scoring system, not the format. I don't care what format we use for teams.
Let me ask both. Look, what's facing, and I'm gonna take another caller right after this. But we have numerous callers that have jumped on here, either jumping on or jumping off. But I want to get to several. Look, both of you are, Coach Creasy, you got an innovative mind. Now, it was never a priority for you. You didn't run around trying to get fans every day in downtown Clemson, South Carolina. You weren't running around. Coach Scarper, you would. You would run around, and I still remember the fake tickets that you were handing out in Greenville. And that was one of the best things.
Can I tell that? You need to tell that story so people understand.
Well, I want you to tell the story, but I'm going to ask both of y'all this question. Tennis is faced, and I think there's this sense of urgency, and Coach Creasy, you respect sense of urgencies, but tennis is faced with dwindling numbers. I think they have shown that women's tennis is just about, they did something just recently where it's way down on the list of popularity. So if you're the USTA or you're the people that are in the marketing arm of this stuff, what should they do? If they shouldn't change the scoring or the ITA shouldn't do this, what do they do, Coach Scarpa, to become, as they say, more relevant to the public, Coach Scarpa?
Well, I really don't know all the answers, but relating back to what I was saying, like you take the most exciting thing about swimming and track and you think about the Olympics, how exciting it is when you're going against the clock. Well, my theory is you put the three doubles out, you play them regular scoring. You could, if need be, go ahead and shorten the sets to six, but play regular. If you know that two teams are going to win, but you don't drag that third team off and so what you do is you leave the, you allow, if they tie, say you are playing and you're up 5-2, but then you leave the team on, and if I can catch it and make it 5-all, it immediately becomes a regular, just a tiebreaker right at that point. Rather than playing extended games or doing anything else, it becomes an automatic tiebreaker. It could, because they've actually had the opportunity to play as much as everybody else. But I think that would be, you're taking the two, one of the, you know, the basketball overtime, you're taking the track with a clock, you're taking the swimming with a clock, and now you brought it into tennis, but it hadn't hurt anybody. Everybody, because you're playing a breaker at that point. So just keep in mind that if two teams, I'll put three out there, they've all played essentially, say, an hour. Well, it's only 3-2 in one of them. If that other team ties them up and makes it 3-all, then they play a tiebreaker, you know, which I've never been too much involved in. But I think that's sort of my theory on it. And I look at, I just think that at some point, it's like all sports, you have an overtime. You know, they throw it into overtime, basketball especially, and everybody, you know, everybody wants to catch an overtime. But I think taking people off the court and doing things like that is, you know, I really don't understand why that should even be in there. And the argumentation for all this stuff was back years ago, you know what, you can't take them off the court because, you know, they can't get, you know, that mess their ranking up. And I said, well, how about baseball? Don't they have a pitcher when they put a substitute and, the guy coming in, wins the game for them? So why can't we do it? Well, people would be faking an injury so you could put people in. And then I went, and it almost threw me, and I even presented it. I don't know if you remember, I said something about substitution. I said, well, why don't we have substitution? You know, if you got a guy at 7 and 8 and they could be playing better than a guy that's going through the motions, or a guy who's a huge serve when you need a huge serve, what he would do is just simply come in and start right there. But, you know, all those things are just ideas and thoughts. But I really think the existing one, the one not to know at, I think that's just, I mean, everybody, it's just so quick. And I think it's just,
JP.
Coach Scarpa, let me ask you real quick, let me ask you a question on that. And we've heard Coach Creasy on this, and I'm kind of curious. I want to hear it from they got rid of NOAAD. It came in, and they got rid of NOAAD, and it wasn't popular, I don't think, at the time. What is your recollection of that? How did that happen? Why is it now viable to come back and look at it again, so to speak? I mean, do you think it's viable?
I think what Chuck was saying, you know, you patronize them people who come to the match, you put up a red flag, oh, shh, be quiet. You know, this is it right here. You know, and it got people excited about it. Van Allen was a guy who brought that, and you'd have thought he was, you know, just invented something and of course Georgia, you know, really got involved in it. He really liked it, and I think he's a leader in our profession. And they had a good team, and they had crowds, and they had that before Van Allen got there. But then when it came about in the NCAA, and they just had some, everybody jumped on the bandwagon, you know. And then it was changed, you know.
Were you a fan of Noel?
Me? Well, you know, I'm one of those people, if you have to do it, you better be a fan of it. But I was not, you know. I looked at it from, you know, my coaching at Furman. Well, you know, it was really an advantage for us in a lot of ways to have Noel, you know.
Wow.
Let's face it, the better players, just like Chuck said, are going to work harder, and they know that, you know, they don't be worrying about one point. So, you know, it just changes. You know, you got a guy with a huge serve, well, he's just going to go for the bomb. And you got, and then, I mean, the workmanship that guy puts forward is eliminated almost, and it's a lot of luck. I mean, you know, a guy aces a guy, boom, you know, right there. He didn't get a second chance. He's saying, gosh, I should have stood over a little bit. I should move in a little bit or whatever. It takes coaching out of it because, you know, what a kid's thinking is what you should be telling him, you know. So I thought it was probably great for kids, and, you know, where they get into tournaments and get a chance to play, and they can play a round robin and if you get beaten in the main event and all. But no, I wouldn't think for grown guys in college, you know, 19 to 22 year olds should be playing no ad, you know. So that's just my feeling.
Both coaches, Alan Fox was on my show, and he said that no ad is like a sprint, and playing ad is like the mile. Coach Creasy, you're obviously not a fan. Why are you not a fan of no ad? What is the real?
I'm getting ready to write up the 14 reasons why no ad is detrimental to the growth of a player. But to answer your question, I'm for player development and the educational prospect of, or education development of the players, and it takes away the condition, takes away the coaching, takes away, makes randomness. There's so many hidden factors, like people don't realize one point, that no-ad point is two games. It's the game you should have had, the game they have now. It's going to take you two games to make up for that one let cord, lucky shot, bad call, may I say, But the randomness is, again, randomness is not what our game should be about. It should be about skill sets and development. I'd like to make one quick point about the false idea of overtime and keeping the doubles involved. We should have let sweeping doubles count as 2 points instead of, you know, you can win the 1 point if you win 2 out of 3, but if you win 3 out of 3, it should have been 2 points. That way you could have had a tie 4-4, and then you have your overtime period. And believe me, Paul doesn't remember this, but that was his idea, one of his ideas, the multiple ideas that he has, you know. So that was one of his ideas that he might not remember.
Let me tell you a real quick commercial break. I'll come right back, and I'm going to try and get another caller, 368-8200, on in just a second. A quick commercial break.
I can't think of a better place to go than courtmakers.com for any of my court equipment needs. Any kind of equipment that you need for your club or facility. Windscreens, nets, net straps, benches, scoreboards. You can find all of this at courtmakers.com. Or like them on Facebook and see all the latest stuff that they're doing in court construction, resurfacing, and lighting. That's courtmakers.com, courtmakers.com.
Hi, this is Coach Chuck Creasy. All of you know that I take pride in calling it the way it is. And boy, oh boy, is it an exciting time in tennis. The 10 and under stuff, the juniors, the pros, and college. If you want to hear the cutting edge of the real stuff and not just the diluted and watered down fluff, folks, listen to Coach J.P. Weber on the We Coach Tennis program every Tuesday at noon Eastern Standard Time here on the Yellow Ball Network.
All right, I don't know a whole lot about a whole lot, but I went and watched Coach Scarpa a match between Georgia Tech and Georgia. Now, they're both decent teams a week ago. The doubles was over, Coach Scarpa, in about 19 minutes and 48 seconds. 19 minutes and 48 seconds. And then the whole match was over in 2 hours and 5 minutes. And I just don't – it almost – you know, when they come back after the – when they come back after the you know, between the singles and the doubles, there's at least two games where they're kind of flat. So, I'm not sure how that. What did you hear, Coach Creasy's? Well, we lost the caller. I hope they'll call back. Would you like the idea of if they swept, having a three? You know, you get 2 points for the sweep, and then playing
well,
an overtime.
I know Coach said I said that, and I did say that a long time ago. But I knew, like any other thing you propose, it's not. You know, it's just it doesn't rarely does it ever happen. Really, you know, unless you got somebody on the, you know, ITA committee that wants to bring it to everybody's attention. You know, when you go to the meetings, everybody knows, everybody's talking up front, and it's almost like it's like an attorney going watching a judge up there. He knows what it is. If it has nothing to do with the case, he doesn't have to listen. And that's sort of the way I always felt. But going to the meetings, you know, everybody was. Yeah, you were talking, but nobody was listening. So,
well, USTA, ITA, these groups have a lot of responsibility. Let me bring on area code 770-368-8200. Cole, are you there?
I am, JP. It's Bill Ozaki. How are y'all?
Ozaki, how you doing?
Good. Great to hear from Coach Creasy and Coach Scarpa, two of the best of all time, and. My topic on college tennis, you know, regardless of the formats and everything else, but I do want to thank them for over the years that they did sign primarily American players. And to me, that's the biggest issue I'm dealing with parents on the collegiate scene is that the proliferation still of the foreign players and no movement up to this point on trying to put any kind of limitations on it. And it probably would be a legal battle, but, you know, junior colleges did it 5 or 6 years ago, and I haven't seen a challenge there. And so, you know, I think they just need to, we just need to do it.
Bill, professional soccer did it years ago as well.
Sure. And, you know, golf, I understand, has a gentleman's agreement on it with these college teams. So it's not in the rules, but, you know, there's an agreement there. And I understand that some of it has to do with the, you know, abilities of a coach to develop players. You know, when the freshman ineligible rule was there, I thought that was great because not only did freshmen need that, and, of course, you know, Lou Alcindor or Kareem, I think that's the biggest part that did away with that when the freshman UCLA team beat the defending national champions, and they said, well, we guess freshmen can play. But so I thought it was great for development purposes, and the both of you certainly developed a lot of players, and a lot of other coaches did too, but bringing in ready-made players, and I don't know how much development is there.
Let me ask you, Mr. Ozaki, you're with the Southern State. You see the figures on this, I'm sure. And Coach Creasy, you could. I'd like you to react to this, and definitely react to his comment about the foreign players. But I, at my center, have seen over the years, as you know,
positions and teams and scholarships evaporated, I have seen a slow trickle where we used to, when I was a kid, Bill, you would not fill your girls' 18s. We still don't fill the girls' 18s, but now what I'm also seeing is that the boys' 18s, I'm seeing a lot less boys in the boys' 18s and things of that nature. I feel like, and I hear, that they're making that decision earlier on to stop playing tennis. Is that something, am I seeing that, or do you, could you confirm that in any way? Or I do
see that, you know, we've had a decline the last several years. On the other hand, though, you know, all youth sports have actually had some decline since 07, 08, and we know, I think we all know that there's some economics tied to that. We're doing a lot to get that turned around, and I think we will turn it in tennis because we're putting so many people locally on the ground to get kids started, you know, make the experience as good as possible, especially in entry-level tournaments, you know, like similar to the ones that you run there. And provide for us. So I think that's going to make a difference in it. I know some of them, as they're getting older and they see that, well, I'm not going to have any opportunity to be on a college team. I think some of them are, you know, turning to their studies, which is good, and concentrating more on that. And so we do want to change that. We are promoting, you know, there are a lot of really great D3 programs. I mean, several of our players that played at Williams College in the last several years, and that coach has won 5 national championships in her first 6 years at D3, and it's a great experience there. And so we're having more players looking at D3 instead of just D1. D2 is a tough road to hoe there because they didn't adopt some of the D1 rules, and so some of the players who now can't play D1 are pushed to D2, and of course NAIA. But we're hoping to make some inroads at those levels also, too. But I think we'll turn this thing, JP, and I think I see it beginning to turn already with our numbers, and they're beginning to increase already.
Let me ask you this. When you Coach Creasy, are you still there?
Yeah, I'm here.
I looked, they put out a deal on the competition committee thing, and you were on that last year. It didn't have your name on there this year. Are you not on there this year?
No, I'm not on there. You know, it's all good.
What happens, Bill, I happen to look at the names of the people, and there's very few people that are actually that have coaching. How does stuff like that get determined, Bill? You got a guy like Coach Scarpa who's, you know, ought to be invited to sit emeritusly on a committee like that. Coach Creasy ought to be emeritus on a committee. You know, guys that have done it a lot, I don't see them on the competition committee. Why is that?
We would love to have them on our Southern committees. Every time there's a new president in the section or USTA, they make all the appointments. So it happens every 2 years at both levels. But both of them have an application process now, too. So when folks apply, you know, and then they're trying to get some new folks in. I know at our meeting this year at Southern, I think we usually have about 300 there, and we had 58 new folks to committees, which is good because prior to this year, we've probably, you know, out of 300 had, you know, the 275 plus have been the same ones. So it's good to get new folks in, but when we do that, then some of the ones, you know, that maybe they've been on there, they've got to move on a little bit there too. But we'd love to have Coach Scarpa and Coach Creasy on a Southern committee.
How do you coaches and Coach Scarpa and Coach Creasy? I'm kind of curious from you guys in your perspective. The USGA has done a lot to shorten matches for junior tennis. And my biggest fear, Mr. Coach or Bill, is this. I listened to Bill Mountford. I think it was Bill Mountford that said if the collegiate ranks change and go to NOAAD scoring, you can bet that junior tennis, USGA junior tennis, will make that change as well. You know, that's a bothersome thing for me. We've already shortened it enough. I think not playing third sets. Bill, I'll have a level four, and a kid that's played level four has played a decent amount of tennis, and they'll walk up to my desk, and they won't even understand what a third set is sometimes.
That's true. Yeah, no, I agree. You know, we try to follow collegiate formats, you know, with the thought that, you know, we're trying to prepare as many, you know, most of our players, most players will never play professionally. Most of our players probably cannot play at D1, but they will play at some level, we hope. And that's why we followed collegiate formats. You know, when college went to 8-game pro sets, we pretty quickly went to that in juniors. And we haven't gone to the 6-game yet, but we're kind of waiting that out a little bit to see if that's going to stick. And then we haven't used NOAD extensively, except in inclement weather. But, you know, if college stays with that, it seems to make sense to us that we do go to NOAD, because that certainly will save some time and other things, you know, as far as the kids playing matches.
Can I make a comment there, Sneaky?
Please.
Yeah, first of all, Bill's made – I want to comment on the stuff about the international student-athletes and the foreign players, because that's critical. He hit the nail on the head with almost everything he said. I wanted to say, though, to any USTA people out there, and Bill, this is a fact, that most of the time, as you know, the college decisions are not made because they're an educational decision or they're better decisions. Most of the time they're being made because they're a political decision. And I don't think there's anybody out there that will disagree that going to a game pro sets for doubles has really hurt our players' doubles play. They should have stayed with top priority always being singles in the main draw. Second priority should have stayed 2 out of 3 sets with doubles, and then somehow get some consolation things if people wanted them for certain events. Of course, Kalamazoo being a great, great consolation tournament. But the A-game pro set has really hurt the development of players. There's nothing that's been worse than the 10-point tiebreaker. I've written extensively on it, and you can go to my website if you want, chuckcreasy.net, and read more on it. But the point being is that when people win a 10-point tiebreaker, they never really know that they were the winners. They basically want a crapshoot. And when they lose, it doesn't hurt enough for them to develop. Players only move forward through two ways. The rites of passage are always a winning tough match where they win 7-5 in the third or 7-6 in the third. Then they know they've arrived. Winning a 10-point tiebreaker never allows them to go forward. Secondly, doubles used to be a good rite of passage for a youngster when they won 2 out of 3 set matches and found themselves on final day next to the singles finals. When they find themselves there now, they've won 8-game pro sets, and it's sort of like, well, I might belong, but you're a red-haired stepchild, in fact. So point being to the USTA, Bill, is that do not look at college decisions as educational. They're political, and they're not educational decisions. And with the youngsters, we should be doing nothing else except educational decisions. So that's my comment on that. But I would like to talk in a minute on the foreign players, JP, when you think it's appropriate.
Coach Scarpa, when I talk to are you there, Coach Scarpa?
Yes.
When Peter Smith was on Lisa Stone's show, and then Bobby Bayless was on my show, and I mentioned this, the idea that, look, when you guys make the switch, you're doing it, like Coach Creasy said, for political and entertainment purposes. Junior tennis is going to make that switch too. You know, they told me that it wasn't their concern, that they didn't care what happened with junior tennis, and they really weren't worried about junior tennis. And I've heard it now twice now from, you know, I feel pretty strongly that if they keep this change, which I don't think they have this year, that looks like they're flipping back now, Coach Greasy. And Bill, you know, you ought to, I mean, they're flipping back. They flipped over the weekend back to regular scoring, so that ought to send a signal to you about how popular
it should be done.
But Coach Scarpa, when you were innovating this stuff, I mean, you sort of felt a response. responsibility not just to college tennis, but to tennis in general. There was something that – am I wrong on that, or am I just stabbing in the dark there?
Well, I think I was trying to – you know, I could see what was happening, and I think I was trying to figure out a way to keep everybody happy, to be honest, and yet give the kids, the players, an opportunity to be successful. And that's all. And that's basically what I did was college tennis. And I don't say I taught an awful lot of good juniors and coming up. But I agree with Chuck. I mean, you know, you shorten it. I mean, when I played even, and I know I'm way up. But I mean, I used to go to Belton. We played best of five sets. I mean, you know, I can't even think of playing five sets. But we always had to play five sets. And so you got a lot of play in, and the doubles was staggering because very few people, you know, I mean, I know Chuck said something about the court next to you is doubles, but the pros, they don't even play it, you know, because I know why. They just don't, but they could win a lot of money playing it if I even talked to them about it one time. They called me up and asked me about the doubles for the pros, and I said, well, I don't know a whole lot about it, but we said, one's comment was, more pros, but they bring more golf clubs than they bring tennis rackets, the doubles players, because they play one match and then they're playing golf the rest of the week there and heading to the next event. So I don't know. I mean, I'm just listening to what they're saying. But I know Chuck, I mean, the more you play, the more competitive it is, and you're playing a real game, real scoring, and, you know, that makes sense, you know, unless you want to just change scoring for everybody. But I wouldn't follow our pattern at all, you know.
Bill, let me ask you, you know, when I run events here, and if I talk about, there's a segment of the population that really, they don't like the no-ad. They readily see the chance side of it, you know, even the most basic players. Your thoughts on that?
That, you know, I think no-ad is, it's a little similar to what Coach Creasy said about the, you know, the tiebreakers, in that, you know, you do have some players that can gear up for X number of points and win a tiebreaker instead of a third set, whereas a third set played out is certainly a test to your stamina, your endurance, your perseverance, and other things like that. But, you know, in the world we're in today, with the time factors, and I'm not really sure of all the reasons for these collegiate changes right now, but I hear about time and things like that, and we're certainly under that with the juniors, in that we've tried to add doubles to all of our junior tournaments, whereas many of them used to only have singles, but yet we're trying to cram as many as possible into 2 days so the kids don't miss regular school. And so we're under some constraints there. You know, we can't, but as Coach Scarpa said, you know, in the old days, I know John Callen told me, I think in one of his first tournaments, you know, he played six singles matches in one day. Now, the first four might have been 0-1, but still, you know, that's unheard of today. And if we do that today with all the legal things and everything, obviously we can't do that, or, you know, we'd be put on the chopping block there. So, but there's no doubt that no-ad saves time, and it speeds things up, and certain players play it better than others. You know, you get to that three-all point, and there is a lot of pressure there and everything else. But, again, with the tours, you know, going also using no-ad and not playing the third set, it trickles down. I guess that's why some of the collegiate leaders looked at that also, too, you know.
Well, guys, thank you for coming up. Coach Creasy, I've got 1 minute left. I'll let you have the last word.
Just real quick on Bill, the internationals. Yeah, it's a shame that the ITA never has addressed the international situation. They said that there could be a lawsuit. Well, there never would be. I'd like to ask people, who's going to sue? Do you think the kid would sue from another country? No. Would his parents sue from another country? No. Would the coach sue his own school? For our coaches association because you couldn't recruit a foreign kid? No. With the athletic department, nobody's going to sue. That was a easy out for the ITA, to tell you the truth. We need to address this, and maybe your idea, JP, was the best ever. Instead of saying you can't do something in our free and democratic society, we need the USTA to step up and say, you know what, let's give $100,000 to the coach in America who does the best job with American players as a bonus to his school or however they can do it. Let's reward those people who are recruiting American players. Let's also have the USTA. USTA should be making an all-American team, the best Americans. We should be honoring those guys. And if we do it from rewarding principle, that might work better and would be more politically correct, even though that's not the reason why you should do stuff. You ought to do it just because it's right. It's wrong to have all of our American spots being taken up with international students. Nobody's against them, but it's gone overboard, and that's one of the real issues ITA needs to address.
Thanks for your great show, JP.
All right, Coach, thanks for coming on.
This has been the We Coach Tennis Radio Show on the Yellow Ball Network. Check in here with us every Tuesday at noon and listen to another great coach talk about what makes their program a success.